This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Tom Perriello is a United States Congressman representing Virginia's 5th District here in Central and Southside Virginia. He joins us on the program once a month to keep us updated about what's going on from where he sits. How are you, sir?
I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
Very good. No complaints. I hope you had a good weekend.
Sure. It was a lovely weekend, and we actually had most of the family up here in D.C. for lunch today, where the American Academy of Pediatrics was giving a posthumous award to my dad. So,
oh, fantastic.
An emotional day and a nice day for some of his work on sports medicine, but really meant a lot to us.
Absolutely. And Tommy, when did he start practicing here in Central Virginia?
He practiced there, I think, for 38 years.
Wow.
It was, it's about right, because I think it was in maybe 71 or 72. It was before Paige was born in 72, who's now working at Pediatric Associates. So, it was quite a run for them, and obviously still PA is going strong.
Yeah, and we got a whole scores of kids here in Central Virginia who grew up with him as their doctor.
Well, that's interesting. Just in the last few weeks, I've started having people come up to me and say, hey, your sister is my doctor, and make that transition. In fact, I was at Greenbrier Elementary School last week, I think, with the president's secretary of education, Arnie Duncan, to get this wonderful, the school was getting this wonderful blue ribbon award that very, very few schools in the country get. It was a huge honor for Greenbrier and the principal and the faculty over there. And apparently one of the students tweeted that they were really excited to meet that Tom Perriello was at their school today so that they could meet their doctor's brother.
there you go.
But congratulations to everyone at Greenbrier. It was a great accomplishment. And we actually brought the superintendents together from many of the 22 counties in my district to meet with the secretary about education issues facing a range of schools that we have in the 5th, from very rural, small, heavily economically depressed towns, areas like Charlottesville with a fair amount of growth, and just seeing some of the ideas. And one of the things that was very cool about the meeting is I think there's an interest right now in moving the conversation from the sort of how do we make sure everyone meets these minimum standards to how do we promote excellence again? How do we get people moving onto tracks where they can really excel, whether that's in one academic discipline or another, as well as, you know, vocational career training programs and computer science. And I think it's an exciting time for us to think about how we get education headed towards that next generation of excellence.
We're talking with United States Congressman Tom Perriello of Virginia's 5th District. Tom, give us some details about, I mean, that's a big deal when the Secretary of Education comes to your school right here in our community. Why that school? What were they doing?
They've just done such a tremendous job with the classrooms of hitting all their standards, but also being able to provide this huge range. As the Secretary said, it looked a little bit like a mini United Nations there. There are folks, kids who've come in from around the world, around the state, and moved into our community, despite some tough economic conditions for some of the families that go to school there, really just hitting these very excellent marks. So they were able to get awarded this Blue Ribbon Award, and we were there, and it was actually on my birthday, and the kids sang happy birthday to me, so that was a very nice surprise as well. But, you know, sometimes people talk, particularly in this environment, about how saying, hey, you know, government can't do anything well, just look at our schools. And we certainly have schools that are failing and schools that are struggling, but we have just accomplished amazing things with the tough work of our teachers, principals, and parents to be able to make some great learning environments that do get people on track, whether that's to college or to a trade, to be ready for this workforce. So I think it's important to not only shine a spotlight on where things aren't working out, but also to really celebrate excellence where we see it.
Absolutely. We're talking with Tom Perriello. Let us turn our attention to healthcare if we can. What's the latest?
Well, things have been moving forward. The big news was that it got through the final Senate committee, so this is the first time comprehensive health care reform has cleared all the necessary committee hurdles, and now the House and the Senate will combine into conference reports, and we're continuing, obviously, to monitor all the details on that. The good news is a lot of the things that I've been pushing for to try to get to a yes on this seem to be getting to the fore. First and foremost among those to me is competition, which I really see as a key for bringing down costs. been promoting, whether that's interstate competition and portability, which I think would be a big step forward, as well as looking at how some of these other things, from co-ops and public options to healthcare ministries and other things, can all be part of letting a thousand flowers bloom, let this competition happen to provide a better quality product at a lower price. So I think there's been progress on a lot of that, and that's obviously the sort of thing we're monitoring, as well as some of the wellness and prevention things that I think can help shift some of the incentives, some of the deeper reform issues that we've been working on.
Do you think some type of public option will make its way into the final markup?
It's tough to say. I think probably more likely than not right now. It'll almost certainly be in the House version of the bill, the Senate version. Senator Harkin made some strong comments over the weekend saying it would be in there in some form. There's some innovation and creativity going on there with triggers and opt-ins and opt-outs and all of that. I think there's a fairly broad sense that if we're going to mandate insurance, then we have an obligation to make sure there's a quality, affordable option out there. I'm a big fan of interstate competition helping to drive this, but the fact is, to ensure that there's at least one major competitor in every market makes a lot of sense, I think, from a market perspective. So we'll see. I haven't been able to crack the code of how the Senate works yet, but it looks right now more likely than it did before that will be part of it.
We're talking with Tom Perriello, the congressman from Virginia's 5th District. Honored to have him on the line. And Eric is with us as well on line 2. Eric, you're on with Congressman Perriello. You go right ahead.
Yeah, Congressman, I'd like to shift gears a little bit. I'd like to ask a question about the Obama home modification plan. I've been talking with my mortgage lender and a couple of other people about both the Open Access, which is a plan that allows mortgage holders to refinance up to 125% if they're upside down in their mortgage due to the real estate property values dropping, and also this modification plan. And the lenders themselves say there are no clear guidelines. They say that they were told that they were supposed to try to do 1 million of these modifications in the first year, and they've done about 13,000. I was told by a mortgage processor that the government will not insure these loans, so nobody's gonna refinance if the government's not going to insure them. And in other words, this modification that was supposed to save people from foreclosure is really sort of a paperwork nightmare that they're behind on, and they just can't get anything done. So I'm wondering if you have any advice or help for homeowners who are having a hard time making their mortgage payments and are trying to get through this process and make it work for them and are sort of hitting a dead end.
Well, the frustration is there. The goal, obviously, was to try to staunch the bleeding of more foreclosures happening, which is flooding the market, keeping values down, preventing, obviously, new stock from coming online. And hear it from both sides, the frustration on the one side that the lenders aren't lending despite a huge amount of, bailout and other support that's gone out there, much of which I have not supported, but still not seeing that lending going, still not seeing that as people – banks and lenders and others are trying to get their debt equity ratios cranked up. And from the other side, you hear the concern about, paperwork or lack of clarity in the rules. And, frankly, I am trying to figure out how much truth there is on each side of that going forward. The good news is we are seeing life in the housing market, mostly less in the housing starts, which we'd love to see, and a little more in the housing values and sales. And that's a big part of what got us into this mess and therefore is going to be part of what drives us out of it. One of the big questions right now is whether or not to extend this first-time homebuyer's tax credit, which is up for just another little bit here. I think it is a program that's actually been fairly successful. The realtors that I talked to feel like it's been one of the few things that's helped move things in the market. On the other hand, we can't be doing things if we're not figuring out a way to pay for them. So if there's a way to extend that using other programs that have not been working and not been moving, I think that's a kind of win-win for us.
Eric, thank you for the call. It's a great question. We've got a line open at 977-1070. We're talking with Tom Perriello, the congressman from Virginia's 5th District. Along those same lines, and just to pull back a bit here, that kind of money to help the home buyers and homeowners, part of the stimulus funding, that we're not really going to see next year like we saw this year. And some economists are saying, especially here in Virginia, that the budget next year could be much worse over the next couple of years than we've yet seen because of the lack of stimulus funding, which really, closed the gap this year here in Virginia.
Well, certainly the biggest driver of the deficit has been the loss of revenues at the local, state, and federal level, even more than the new spending. And the best way to get some of these deficits under control are to deal with some of the out-of-control expenditures, healthcare being one of the biggest on that, and obviously dealing with the revenue side. But the idea, I think, with the stimulus was that this is not going to be a rebound of 6 months or 8 months. We're talking about at least 2 years to crawl out of this. And a huge portion, almost half the stimulus, was support to states and localities so that they would not have to crank up taxes at the state and local level. And that is going to continue through next year. And without that, I think you would have either seen a real falling off the cliff where every state looked like California or having to massively ratchet up state and local taxes. Not good in this kind of economic environment. I think the question is going to be what happens in 2011 if we have not rebounded by then. But, there are some signs of life in the Dow and in the housing market. We're still not seeing it in the jobs market, though obviously the bleeding has declined a little bit. But that's going to be one of the big questions, Coy, is what happens if by 2011 we're still seeing these huge revenue shortfalls because we're not seeing the growth? There's not a lot of stomach up here for a second stimulus. We simply can't afford it, and that's going to mean the sooner this economy gets going, the better off everyone's going to be.
We're talking with Tom Perriello, and the phone lines are open at 977-1070. Let's go to Mike in Ivy. Mike, you're on with Tom Perriello. Go right ahead.
Congressman, this is Mike from Ivy. I've met you before.
Say, how you doing, Mike?
I would like you to do something. Someone just called and asked a question about how they may get some help on their mortgage. But you went on and on about what the problem is in defining it, which I think we're all well aware of, but you never gave him an answer. I'd like you to answer the question.
Well, if it's a specific case of wanting help on that, the best place to call is my Charlottesville office, which is 293-9631, 293-9631 for any cases that are specific to you as a home buyer trying to struggle with that. What I guess I was trying to address is the policy question of, is this something where what we need is a legislative or executive fix on the sort of the government side of this, or is this a problem from the lending side? And was trying to diagnose that problem in order to know how to fix it. So if it's a case problem, then call my office and we can open up a case and try to help you out with it. And if it's the policy thing, then we've got to be able to identify exactly what the problem is before we can go around solving it.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Bob on line three. He's in Charlottesville. Bob, you're on with Tom Perriello. Go right ahead.
Yes, Congressman Perriello, I'm interested in knowing what specific program expenses that you'd be willing to cut in order to balance the budget. I know everybody hopes we're going to have more revenues, but it looks like it's going to be quite a while before we have that. We have a $1.24 trillion budget deficit as of October, and looks like we're looking at doubling up that over the next 12 to 14 months. I think we need some more responsible government in terms of cutting expenses. I'd like to know where you see the budget cuts in order to balance the budget. And I'll be glad to take my question, the answer, off the air.
Thank you, Bob.
Thanks for the question, Bob. I actually proposed paying for health care with an across-the-board cut in non-military discretionary spending. I know it's a little bit of a blunt instrument to do the cuts across the board when some programs are stronger or weaker, but I've rarely seen other things work very well in terms of Congress constraining itself. The kind of discretionary caps that the first President Bush helped put in place were one of the elements, along with Clinton's first budget, that led to the balanced budget of the 90s. So I propose that. I have not been successful in that effort. The other problem, of course, is that over 75% of the federal budget is non-discretionary. It's the entitlement programs of Medicare, Medicaid, and the veterans' health benefits, Social Security, defense, and the service on the debt. So that means if you're not dealing with those areas, you've automatically taken over three-quarters of the budget off the table. So obviously those are issues we're going to have to look at as well if we're going to get serious about this. One of the things I'm looking at in healthcare reform is, you know, you hear this expression, bending the cost curve over time. You know, if you make even a small reduction in cost to these three big healthcare programs, veteran, Medicare, Medicaid, over time, that is one of the most substantial things you can do in order to curb the federal deficit. It's just huge. Even small percentage changes in that have very large impacts on it. So when you look at some of these things like moving from fee-for-service to bundled payments in the Medicare system, and you hear from the doctors and providers that this will actually help them provide higher quality care to seniors at a cheaper price, in the same way that more opportunities to age at home, better for the patient, better for the bottom line. These are the sorts of things that I think can do savings over time. So I have supported across the board discretionary cuts, which I think is a little bit blunt but necessary. But also, if we don't touch that 75%, we're not going to get there.
We're talking with Tom Perriello. Bob, thank you for the call. We've got time for one more question, and the phone lines are open at 977-1070. Before we let you go, you wrote a letter recently to Speaker Pelosi. What was that about?
Well, what I did was I tried to get a group of the freshmen coming back out of August to put together some of the best ideas that we had heard from our constituents that we felt needed more coverage in the healthcare debate. Many of us were people who have been in the no column but are trying to get to yes because we think healthcare is such an important is in crisis, and really emphasized issues like interstate portability and competition, the issue of tort reform, which obviously my party has not been as eager to tackle, issues of deficit neutrality and bending the cost curve over time, more quality options for our seniors, whether that's negotiating cheaper drug prices, more opportunities for aging at home and home care. These are some of the issues that really came out of those conversations in the district, and ones that we have tried to force the leadership of our party to take more seriously. And I've been happy to see that as the bill has moved forward, some of those things that focus more on cost containment and competition strategies are getting more of a play in the bill, and I think that's the right direction to push.
We're talking with Tom Perriello, the congressman from Virginia's 5th District. What's the latest on that investigation into the fraudulent letters episode that brought you into a bit of a mess there?
Oh, you know, they've been doing a hearing up here, and I was supposed to testify last week, and I think it's going to be either this week or next week now to sort of get to the bottom of it. And, you know, I think the real concern there is not the specifics. You expect a lot of dirty tricks in politics. The issue is really whether you were for or against the climate bill. One of the most important forces in our politics is people power. It's one of the only counterweights to the power of money in our system. And so no matter how much money either side can spend in the climate debate, at the end of the day, if I'm hearing from constituents, I know that's direct people power. And when you start to manipulate that with forged letters and some of these other tactics that these corporate groups pull, it really undermines that idea of the demos in democracy. And again, regardless of which side of the debate you're on, you know, you've got to know that the integrity of that is being protected. So, you know, the specific case is not something that keeps me up at night, but I think that the trend of these things that continue to reinforce the idea that money talks instead of constituents talking is really a problematic trend in our democracy. So, you know, they're taking a look at it, and we'll see what they come up with on it, and we'll keep you posted. And obviously Daily Progress did a lot of groundbreaking reporting on this, and has continued to keep people updated on that story as well.
And before we let you go, I know you're very busy, but can you give us a real quick update on the D-Day memorial legislation?
Yes, we're really excited. It looks like in the authorization bill, there is going to be language. We're going to be able to keep the Senate language in there. Basically, what it does is allows for a study to see whether the D-Day Memorial can be brought into the National Park Service. That's the next big step for us. You know, they look at two basic questions. Is it worthy of the National Park System, which I think anyone who's been to the D-Day Memorial, it makes its own case there. And the second is, what would it cost? And this is a place where I actually think, you know, there has been some, I think there's room to run that more efficiently. I think you've seen those efficiency gains in the last couple years. And I think that's an appropriate question for government to ask. But this is just a great, great resource for our country. It's just a tremendous testimony to those who gave their lives at D-Day and continues to live on for anyone who goes to see it and see the Peaks of Otter. And we're very excited that that process is taking the next step.
He is the congressman from Virginia's 5th District, Tom Perriello. Congressman, always great to talk to you. Thanks for spending some time with us.
All right. Thank you, Coy.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SevillePodcast.com for more.